Have you ever been worried about how things were going to be when your service member came home from a deployment or a longer training, or maybe this year they've been back and forth and now things are getting settled? Maybe the time apart has left you feeling out of sync with your service member, or maybe you don't even know what to expect moving forward, so you don't know how to move forward yourself. If you answered yes to any of these questions, this podcast episode is just for you. I interviewed Corey Weathers, whose firsthand knowledge and clinical perspective unravels the complexities and emotions tied to a military family's or couple's reintegration phase. Corey shares her expertise on coping strategies, maintaining a strong relationship amid all the change, and building a higher level of resistance. We're going to help you understand why you may feel out of sync with your returning spouse and how to bridge that gap by fostering new shared experiences. We'll also discuss Corey's new book, Military Culture Shift, which will give you insights on how to navigate more effectively in the evolving military spouse culture. This episode is packed with practical advice to help you adapt to change and build a stronger and more resilient military family and spouse life. Let's get to the interview and learn with Corey. Welcome to the Waiting Warriors podcast, the podcast for military spouses and significant others who are committed to their service member and want to make the most out of this unique military lifestyle. It's for genuine and honest conversations about topics normally glossed over or things that we just don't talk about for those who want to know actionable and tactical things so that they can really thrive. I'm your host, Michelle Bowler, military spouse of almost 12 years. Let's get to the interview. Hey, Waiting Warriors out there. Welcome to another week on the Waiting Warriors podcast. My name is Michelle Bowler, your host, and today we have a fabulous guest. You will want to get your notebooks out, Corey Weathers. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you, Michelle. So happy to be here.
And Corey has been on the show before, but I guess it's been like years with how long it is, but we're super excited because we're going to talk about reintegration today, which is one of my favorite topics because nobody else talks about it. But Corey also has a fabulous book that we'll talk about throughout it. That, well, she has two books, but one is about to come out as we're recording, but will be out by the time that everybody is listening to this. But this is a book that we all need to read. So we'll talk about that towards the end. So Corey, could you introduce yourself for those of you who don't remember you from last time?
Yeah, Michelle, thank you so much. I think the last time I was on the show with you might have been, it was definitely after Sacred Spaces, but it has been a little while. But yeah, so I am a military spouse myself. My husband has been in for, I think, 16 years, but I've stopped counting at this point. I'm just going to, one day, he's just going to tell me that we're close to 20, and then I'll remember the numbers again. But it's like this weird stage between like around 13 to 20 that you just are like, I'm just going to hang on till he says we're done. Cause you never know, right? Like they're going to get to 19 and be like, I'm going to keep going. I'm a military spouse. We're currently stationed at Fort Cavazos, formerly Fort Hood. And I am a mental health clinician by trade. I always knew I wanted to go into counseling and I was going to follow this amazing counseling track, opening my own practice until my husband came home and said he wanted to become a chaplain. We fought a little bit about it. I eventually said yes. And honestly, once I met everybody and understood what this culture is about, like we never looked back. And so all of my clinical experience has been serving this population and first responders as well, because my father-in-law is a retired police officer. His dad was a police officer. And we just saw so many things in common in the service profession. And so I've evolved my career over time because I'm a military spouse. I had five licenses at one point. And so I decided to branch into consulting and coaching. And that also turned into speaking and teaching. And so really, it's really just taking that clinical background and trying to advocate for families for what's really happening, boots on the ground, and helping anybody else understand what that actually looks like. There's just things that people share behind confidential doors or at a speaking event or on the side of a speaking event that they're not going to share publicly. And so that has just been my joy to serve the population in whatever best way I can offer to hopefully leave it in a better place whenever we leave.
Well, I know, like, I'm so excited to have you guys on the show and new listeners. Like, it is a treat to be around Corey. It really is. When she says, like, she hopes that she leaves in a better place when they leave, like, you leave a conversation with Corey and you feel better. I was thinking last night, I was like, how do you properly describe Corey? And here's where I landed. It's like when you hear an amazing speaker and you like know that you can do hard things. But what makes Corey better is like, I've heard motivational speakers and then like the next day I feel deflated and like, oh, they lied to me. I just wrapped up in the moment. Corey, you really think you can, because she's Michelle, shown
that's,
you
that's all the those best things. Compliment anybody has ever given me. And honestly, there's, especially now that I'm coming out with a second book, people often ask me, you know, questions about how do I get to do what you're doing? Or honestly, I will say there's nothing that is more rewarding or that makes me feel like I am succeeding more than if people leave feeling that way, like feeling like I was present with them. There can be a lot of shiny things. Even writing a book sounds like a really shiny thing. And it's a really hard, and I don't recommend it to many people because it is really, really hard to do. But there's nothing that brings me more joy than people and relationships. And I consider it my calling. At the end of the day, I feel like what I'm called to do is to walk with people through dark times, dark moments, and introduce them to the light. That is the only thing that I feel like I am on this planet to do. And that can happen in a conversation. And I hope that people maybe listen to this episode and realize that can be a sense of purpose for you listening, is that like just the person in front of you is worthy and valuable and just needs a breath of fresh air. And that can be the greatest gift that you give anybody. And that's worth so much more than money or whatever success means to you. So Michelle, thank you for sharing that. It means a ton. It really does.
Well, every word. And you gave us a perfect bridge into the topic, because reintegration can be it can be dark. And so my first question is, as I started sharing online about reintegration and that it can be hard, and I was pushing this message of like, you're not the only one that this is hard. So many people, like I'm talking hundreds of military spouses, would send a message saying, I legit thought I was the only one. I thought I was, so anything along the lines of, I thought I was a terrible spouse. I thought I was being a total jerk. I thought I was broken. Can you speak into that? Because I think the listeners at this point get that they're not the only one, but you do have like a clinical background. Like, are we broken? Do we need to face that fact that maybe there is something wrong with us?
Well, I think part of the answer is, are we broken? All of us, yes, just a little bit. Let me just start with that. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like, all of us struggle with something. All of us are going through something difficult at different times. Suffering is subjective, and we're not gods. And so we're going to come across really hard things in life that make us feel like we don't have the tools or the capability or the skills to get through it. And it's going to feel like we're broken. And I don't think that has to be a bad thing. And you brought up the first book that I wrote, Sacred Spaces. I wrote it in 2015. Mm-hmm. I think it actually came out in 2016. But the whole point of it was me reflecting on our first deployment and reintegration. And that was what my husband came home from that deployment saying, that he felt broken because he had his soul shredded during that deployment, going through the loss of friends. And in a similar way, I had gone through a deployment that was excruciatingly hard, whether it was walking with families who had lost loved ones, or whether it was just me trying to wrangle toddlers through an entire year and stretch my own soul to the limits of anything that I had ever experienced before. And so there were times that I also felt broken. So I think the first answer is, it's okay to feel broken. Because whenever I hear that phrase, I'm reminded of my husband saying that during reintegration, am I broken? And of course, my answer was like, no, you're not. You're human. And you've been mm-hmm. through something really hard. Now, do we have some rebuilding to do? Absolutely. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing. And so, yes, in some ways, we can be broken. And that's okay. Let's have that conversation. But at the same time, let's just also connect on the fact that thank goodness we have a community where we can have this conversation and talk about the hard things and talk about our limits and talk about what do we do when we hit our limits and how do we grow through them and how do we gain wisdom to move through those hard times through mentoring, through conversation. The only way I got through those tough moments myself is because I had mentors that said, this is really hard and I've been there and this is how you can get through it. So I would really love to maybe start having more conversations with us all being okay with struggle. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. Because I think as we talk about the struggle, which literally has been like the whole thought behind the Waiting Warriors podcast and now everything that I'm trying to do is like, if we don't talk about it, then we feel like we're alone. And nobody knows any of the resources. Nobody knows any of the resources. And nobody knows any of the coping mechanisms that helped one person. And this one helped this person. So I'm going to take these two different ones and apply them for me.
If I can just jump in for just a second. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, I had a session with someone, with a spouse who is National Guard, going through her very first deployment. And she also, I don't want to give away too much information, but she was also a therapist. So she was doing all the things right. And she had done all the workshops and read all the books and just was like killing it when it comes to collecting the resources to help her get through whatever this next hard thing of deployment, a new thing for her and her family. And yet she found herself missing the one component that she could not collect. And that was being a National Guard spouse. She didn't have a spouse community. She had social circles and book clubs and a church Bible study. And she was doing the best that she could with going out for coffee and not isolating in her home. But really it came down to, I just need to talk to somebody who understands this, because this is different and nobody else is understanding it. And so you can do all the right things. And I would encourage people to access all of those resources that we do have available to us, but you just can't replace. And you also are going to struggle to do life without connecting to people who have the ability to say to you what you're feeling right now is normal. And I'm on the other side of it. And so I'm living proof that you're going to get on the other side of it. And you might be a little bit different than you are right now. And let's talk about that too, because that's scary to grow and change, especially during a deployment, especially during reintegration. I think that's the scariest part, is when we start to grow into our new, more mature selves. And that is scary because it feels like we're pulling apart from our spouse, feels like we're turning into somebody that we like, but then we also are taught that we're not supposed to grow unless we're growing at the same pace, at in the same way with our spouse. So all that gets like super scary. And then we back off and don't know what to do with it if we don't have somebody to talk to about it.
So let's talk about that more. That's actually something that I talk about in the Bulletproof Your Reintegration course, is how two different principles. One, reintegration is not going back to how things used to be. It's not going back to normal. It's rebuilding. You have to create the new normal. You have to rebuild everything. And the reason why you have to rebuild everything is because everybody involved in this has changed. Your service member has gone through whatever they've gone through. Even if it's been a more non-combat deployment now, they've still experienced life. By nature of humanness, you're not going to be the same 6 months later. As a military spouse, you really change. You really grow because of what you have experienced by solo parenting and living life on your own. And to come back together is difficult because in a typical marriage, you're always growing by this 6 to 9 month time period or however long it is, but you're growing right next to each other and hopefully mm-hmm. communicating. And it's vastly different during a deployment, or even I know a lot of people right now are going through TDY for a month, home for 3 weeks, TDY for 2 months, home for another few weeks. And then so this broken up connectedness, can you speak into that? I'm like, how can we do that? Because it is scary and it's hard because it feels weird. Like this is my person. This is who I love, but I'm different. And I'm almost like, I have felt like I'm worried that I'm different because I don't want to pull apart from them. But it's yeah. so easy because of the distance.
Yeah, there's so much there. And that was, and this is the last thing I'll say about the session yesterday. But that was one of the things that we had to talk about because she was in the deployment and I had to almost give her permission to start to make those decisions for her own wellness. There's this point in deployment, and I think it contributes to who we become in that reintegration and figuring out that new normal. And I think that we do it so naturally, we don't realize that we've done it. And so by the time we get to reintegration, we're like, I didn't realize I changed. So mm-hmm. there's this point that I think happens in deployment where, you know, at first, especially if it's your first deployment, you really are trying to parent together and make decisions together. And should I still eat egg whites for breakfast? What do you think? Like you're still trying to stay connected on some of these small things. And then you get to this place where it's like, this is not sustainable. Like either mm-hmm. we're just on two different time zones and I've got to decide what I want for breakfast, or I've got to make this decision about the dog, or I have to figure out how to change my parenting because the kids, it's time for them to evolve to a new stage developmentally of parenting and discipline. Mm-hmm. And I've got to make a decision and he's asleep, he or she is asleep on the other side of the world. And I've got to figure this out. Right. So it starts gradually, but there's this point that happens in the deployment where you start making your own decisions because you're just in a place where you have to. And then you do start like, you know what? I don't think I really need to share with him the decision I made with the dog today because he probably doesn't care. And it's really not the most important thing for us to talk about. And there's so many other more important things we could talk about. By the time you get to reintegration, you've made a gazillion independent decisions and grown in your confidence to make those decisions, which is a wonderful, great thing, right? And then we have this classic clash that happens of the service member coming home and feeling like they're not able to insert themselves and they're not needed. And to be truthfully honest, you don't need them as much because you've made all these decisions, right? So it is scary to make that, if you are aware of it, it is scary to feel like, am I growing apart from them? And it is true, I think, a little bit that we are growing apart from what we originally decided we wanted to be when we got married and decided what is marriage, what is a healthy relationship. But that doesn't mean that you can't reframe it. And so what you then decide in reintegration is what is a healthy relationship and what is healthy independence in a relationship? And what does connection actually mean? How do we want to define that? Because does connection and security in our relationship actually mean that I need to run all my decisions? You know, that we're running all these decisions by each other. Is that really connection? Or does connection look like how we choose to grow together on the things that are really not only important to us, but that we have in common that we're interested in? As the new decisions that are big decisions come up, how do we make those decisions together? Do I let my spouse reinsert back into some of those bigger decisions? And how do we date each other again so that we can get to know, he or she can get to know this new confident side of you? But again, this is messy. It's not a, mm-hmm. there's no clear cut formula. And in that first book, Sacred Spaces, I didn't do this well in the first reintegration. I don't even know if I did it well in the second or third reintegration either. It's very messy. And my husband came home that first reintegration and said he felt like he came home to an angry wife. And at first I just mm-hmm. said, no, I'm just independent. I'm just making all these decisions. And that was true. I was really honest, and I am honest in the book. I was angry. I didn't want to admit it, but I did not enjoy the growing process of becoming independent. I did not enjoy parenting those two toddlers by myself. I did not enjoy cleaning up all the sickness and illness on those days that I was already tired. And I also didn't enjoy what the military and what war had actually done to my husband's soul. And I didn't want to be honest with that because I didn't know how to process it. And I didn't know how to bring that to him, or should I bring that to him? And I was really angry at something. And it took me a long time to realize I was angry at the military and I was angry at war. And really I was angry with evil, honestly, at the end of the day, that caused all of it. So fast forward, I'll make this shorter, but fast forward, our last deployment, he was in Poland where there was no war. It was really just a long deployment. I think it was 9 months, and an entirely different deployment where he got, not only did he get breakfast every morning and be able to, now he was on COVID lockdown, so I'm not saying he had it easy, although he did have access to a nice cafe with lemon croissants and lattes. And I was going through COVID and an ice storm in Texas and a breast cancer scare. And it was an entirely different, difficult deployment. And reintegration was different, but also hard. And so we had to figure out how to grow together. And what we decided to do in that last deployment that I think interestingly shaped our reintegration was we actually kept a shared journal. And every day he would write a journal entry, and we used Day One as a journaling app. But we shared the one account. So it was one journal, but both of us were writing in it. And at the time, there was no way for us to genuinely see each other, just like any normal deployment. You can't understand truly what the other person is going through, but we were writing about it back and forth to each other. And it wasn't until reintegration, months into reintegration, actually it was even a year after, he decided to pick up that journal. I never wanted to pick up that journal ever again. I don't want to read through what I went through. I knew I was tired, exhausted. And I think every day I wrote the same thing. This was a bad day. Mm-hmm. Like every day I felt like I was writing. This was like good for you and your lemon croissants. For me, it was not fun. So I never wanted to pick that up again, but he picked it up. And that was one of the first times he read through it and really saw what I went through and was like, oh my goodness, you really were not doing okay. And he could see on that other side. So sometimes I think reintegration, we pack it all into what's going to happen in the first 6 months after our spouse returns. And we need to remember we are writing a novel of a story of our relationship. And sometimes we've got to give ourselves some time to really figure out, how do we look at all these things that we go through and sometimes go through separately and see each other? Maybe we can't see each other today because we're maybe in the middle of it. And maybe it's not 6 months after, but sometimes it takes even a year or so after that in reflection that you go, okay, now I see you. And can we give each other the grace and patience on that?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any recommendations on how we can come back together?
Yeah. Here's what I've collected just personally and also working with so many couples over the years. A couple, I think, just tips that I would share. Number one, this is a military term, have a sit rep, a situation report, I think is what that stands for, a sit rep. I wish I would have done that on the first deployment. We tell the story, Matt and I tell the story of him coming home, and he was so excited that first morning to make blueberry pancakes for the boys because they liked blueberry pancakes before he left. But at some point during that year, they stopped liking blueberries, and I didn't tell him. And he was letting me sleep in, and he's making pancakes for the boys, and they come downstairs, and what do you know? They're like, we hate blueberries. He just is like, ugh. And after that morning, he was like, I need to know what has changed. Like before I do anything else, I need to know, because I don't want to have that feeling again. And I was scared to say it because I thought it would make him feel bad that people had evolved, including me, while he was gone. But it was unfair to not set him up for a win. So having a situation report, maybe you have expressed this during the deployment on the phone, in emails, in your videos or whatever, but don't underestimate writing it down. What can you keep track of that has changed with the kids, with you? What is your routine? What is your battle rhythm that you have figured out that's really important to you? Do you is it really important that you now get up and have that 5 to 10, 15 minutes of quiet? And does that set the tone for your day? And did you figure out during the deployment that any interruption of that just derails you for the rest of the day? That's important for your spouse to know, right? Because they're going to want first thing for us to have coffee every morning, every day for the next 3 weeks, and you're going to lose your mind. And it doesn't mean that you don't give wiggle room and allow for adjustment. And maybe you try that for a few days before you go, you know what? Actually, I think I still need this. I already got to figure out how to fit this in, but don't lose yourself completely. So give that situation report of what has changed in you and the household with the kids so that they can win and so that you can feel stable. And I would say, yes, like go on those dates, have those conversations, ask them what's changed in them. When I find couples really struggling in their marriage, it easily comes down to values. What are the different foundational values that are important or have changed for the both of you? Really deep arguments only come from, I have a value of what it means to be connected in marriage and what healthy connection or intimacy looks like. And you have a different description of that value. So we've got to get aligned on what those values are. Couples who deal with infidelity, for example, it's a difference in values of what does loyalty mean? What do we do when we're stressed? And what do we do when we feel disconnected? What do we value or believe about facing hard things? And how do we bring that to each other? So when it comes to reconnecting, having those conversations over date nights, over several date nights, that what is important to you? What are the most important values that have grown and shaped and evolved in you? And let's share those together. And then I would just say, millennial and Gen Z are doing a really good job of helping us really think about experiences more. So I would encourage you to do multi-sensory experiences. Yes, maybe you go out and you have a lot of face-to-face conversation over coffee, over dinner, and face-to-face time is really important. But go out and have shared multi-sensory experiences together. Do something silly and playful. And that's not just sex, right? Like silly, playful, like we go do miniature golf or just something. I know Les and Leslie Parrott, they've written a ton of marriage books. I was interviewing him one time and he talked about how to keep their date nights lively and playful, they actually took trapeze lessons. Like, because it was just so out of the box, crazy. Yeah. Neither one of them were going to be good at it. And they were just going to laugh the whole time. And so do things that are multi-sensory that get you out of your element where neither one of you are good at it. And you're both going to probably fail and feel silly because you are like secure and feeling in control of the household. And so I think sometimes a service member comes home and they feel insecure, out of control and disconnected and like they're failing all the time. And so it's really hard to insert yourself in a situation where you just don't feel like you belong or you feel like you keep messing it up. So having a date night where you both are failing at something that's silly, it's just a reminder that we're on the same page here and nobody's in control. And let's connect on something like completely outside of our life for just a second. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a super interesting idea because I think it is super easy, like, maybe it's just me, but like you think of date nights as certain things and none of the things that I was thinking of were letting go of the control. And that's a really interesting tactic. One is probably good for marriage anytime, but especially reintegration. That's super smart.
Well, and what do? We go to dinner and a movie, we watch Netflix, go to an escape room. That's a great idea, right? Where you don't know the answer, right? And you have to work together. Like think of those kinds of things that are different.
Yeah. Yeah. Just anything. Cause also interesting, just like, as I've been researching and trying to learn how to stay connected with my spouse and how to help other people stay connected with their spouses during the deployment and coming back home, it's like most of the traditional date nights don't foster that as well as learning something new, doing something where you have to work together. And I know it sounds so funny, but like I was just talking to one of my military spouse friends because she's like really big on doing an experience with your spouse, something that's a little bit scary. And so they went and climbed. It's like hiking, but also climbing a mountain because you're like on the side of a mountain and they were strapped in with the, it just
repelling.
Seems so scary to me. Yeah, like the rappelling is bolted into the mountain and they're like sliding along with their,
no, thank you.
Stuff. Yeah, but we were laughing. I was talking to my friend about it and we were laughing. I was like, that's like a total The Bachelor show or Bachelorette like type date night of let's rappel up against this mountain and it'll connect us. And while I don't think it works super great on The Bachelor because of the situation that is, there is something sound about doing something scary, doing something where you don't have any control, where you've never done it before, where you're experiencing all these different emotions and your person is right there.
Yes. And it's also like, I can hear the next question from those listening, right? Because what if what you do, your spouse is good at it, but you're not, right? So I would say take mm-hmm. turns, because sometimes going on a hike or going rock climbing, that's still a good strategy. So like, if you can't find something that neither one of you are good at, like I always think about someday Matt and I are going to go golf because neither one of us golf. The only reason why we haven't done it is because we would really make people mad on the golf course if we were there when other people are there. But it is literally a dream of mine to go on a date day where we try to golf because it would just be a mess and it would be so mm-hmm. fun and we would laugh, right? And so if you can't find something to do that neither one of you are good at, then take turns not doing things that we're experts in, but it's also okay to do something where you need your spouse. That's mm-hmm. also a form of intimacy of like doing something shoulder to shoulder. Let's say you do go rock climbing and your spouse has experience in it. Like it's really good for you to take your guard down of being in control all the time and actually allowing yourself, it's practicing the skill of needing them again, which is literally like holding your hand out and letting him help you or letting him or her guide you on that thing. So even if it's you just doing something that they want to do and you reducing or releasing some of that need to be in control is a good building that muscle back again mm-hmm. of needing somebody outside of yourself, but you can take turns.
Yeah. And I think it's important to remember that like, that is the point of a marriage. Yeah. It's to take two healthy, strong people and have them rely on each other.
Yeah.
It's not, I know it's super easy. And I know a lot of military spouses are hesitant, especially after reintegration, because like you talked about, like I've learned how strong I am. I know how strong I am. And I don't want to be, this phrase is popping up because somebody, a feisty military spouse was just like, she was feeling real feisty after I had said something similar about just like being a partner and letting my spouse help me. And she got very feisty about it and how she doesn't need him to do that. She doesn't need him to come save her. But I get that, right? Like mm-hmm. I am a strong woman. I don't always need to be saved. But that doesn't mean that I can't let them in. That doesn't right. mean that I can't be vulnerable with your spouse. Like you have to be able to be vulnerable. There is a part of you that isn't strong. And whether that's coming up in a date night or if it's going to come up in 5 years because of some tragedy that breaks down or triggers those weaknesses, it's going to happen someday. And I think you just have to be willing to do that.
Yeah. Sometimes it's really easy to, all of us do this. We go tunnel vision on what we're going through right now and what we're needing right now. And we don't know what we're going to face in the future. And so it's really easy to get tunnel visioned on I really like being in control. I like, it's working for me. The system that I created during deployment is working for all of us, and let's not disrupt it. And all of that is valid. And what you have grown into is also valid and is also important. And it's going, that character development is going to play a role throughout your life, throughout the rest of your life, whether you go through another deployment, but it's also going to come into play someday, years later, when you and your spouse are much older and you find yourself, and it's not as far off as you think, where you're going to find yourself either in a caregiver role to your spouse or a temporary caregiver role to your spouse. That first time somebody pulls a back muscle or sprains an ankle, or you get out of the military, because I hear these stories all the time, you get out of the military and all of a sudden their bodies do feel broken because of just the wear and tear. And we find ourselves in that caregiver role. And guess what you have learned from all these deployments, how to help and take over and create a system and support them. And all of those things are going to come rushing back. And there's going to be so much gratitude in your relationship because you do need each other. And guess what? You're going to need that too from your spouse. You're going to find yourself in a vulnerable situation where your spouse becomes that caregiver. And that's what marriage is. It is being there for each other and leaning on each other and taking those turns, knowing that I'm going to be here for you when you need me to. And we need these skills developed, that we see each other, that we know how to take care of each other, that we know how to be independent and take care, that I don't rely on you for everything 100% of the time, right? Like, but that we go back and forth, and hopefully it doesn't happen all at once. And so we can tend to get tunnel visioned on, well, I just want to keep it this way, or I don't need you, but guess what? You're going to need them and they're going to need you if we just think into the future. And so how do we learn to take turns on that and learn to accept control when it's needed and release it when it's not? Accept control when we need it and release it when it's not. That is the goal of life is that when tough things happen with your kids, that you step in, control the situation if you need to, and if you don't, let them figure it out, but that you step in if you have to, and then you release it. All of this is the exercise of vulnerability and confidence. But yeah, we need both.
Those are the two perfect words, of vulnerability and confidence. So the last few minutes, I want to share a little bit about your book. And full disclosure, I haven't read it yet. Still, it's supposed to arrive daily. I think it was supposed to arrive last night, but
I'm so excited for you to get it.
I'm super excited to read it. Can you tell us about why should we read it? It's Military Culture Shift. Yes. I know it has, what's the word? Not forward, but like reviews and quotes from amazing people.
Yeah, I'm so honored and grateful. Yeah, so the book is, I'm going to try to get this right myself because it's a long tagline, but it is Military Culture Shift, The Impact of War, Money, and Generational Perspective on Morale, Retention, and Leadership. So this is a long title, but Military Culture Shift, you can Google it and it'll come up. Yeah, it is completely different. Thank you for asking. It is completely different than Sacred Spaces. Sacred Spaces was a really vulnerable, giving you an inside look into my marriage, into our reintegration, into deployment, what changed in both of us, and how do we pursue each other and get back in sync, which I think is really what the topic of today's conversation is about. But over the last 15 years of not only me going through this lifestyle with everybody else, but also serving the population, I just really started to notice these trends that were happening in our culture, in our conversations over the last 15 years, whether it was resentment was one of the first ones that popped up, resentment in my life, but also as I would see in other spouses' lives, and what do we do with that resentment? How do we heal the resentment? The identity crisis, the anxiety, the pursuit of perfection of our service members as they go after those OERs every time, right? Like there's this great amount of stress that happens within our culture. And there's also these traditions and values and beliefs that are threaded throughout our culture too. And really, the book came down to, I felt like as a clinician, I imagined if the whole culture came into my office as a family, this is how it started really. If the whole culture dealing with all of these issues of recruitment crisis and people are leaving and they're feeling resentful and families are burned out and spouses are dealing with resentment and anger about their careers. And we have now military kids that are struggling. And if the family were to come into my office and say, here's all the stuff that we're struggling with, I just knew it as a clinician, I would write down all of those issues and I would say, okay, now that I hear what's happening, tell me how we got here. Tell me your story. And I felt like that's what we were missing. You see all these news articles of Gen Z is to blame on the recruiting crisis and the DOD is to blame and the leaders to blame on the mold crisis, right? And like we're dealing with these singular issues and toxic leadership must be the issue with sexual harassment, right? And they're just these articles coming out that are overwhelming, but they're just dealing with these singular issues like whack-a-mole. If anybody, I'm dating myself as Gen X, whack-a-mole, right? But like, I just felt like there's all these issues and we're dealing with them one at a time and it's so much more complex. So I was like, you know what? Families are complex. And when they come into my office, the only way we can start working on getting better and healing whoever is coming in wanting to get better is tell me your story. Let's pull this apart and let's talk about how did you get here and what are the contributing variables that got us to where we are right now? And then we can start talking about how do we heal going forward? What does it mean to create solutions? And so I hope that people will read it and see their own story. I walk everybody through how did millennials shape our culture? Because in that second decade of the two-decade war, that second decade, our culture became an online culture instead of an in-person culture. And that's why we're having a hard time with people showing up for coffees, military balls, all those things that bring us support and fun and connection. And so some of those things are deteriorating. And part of that is because of social media and what millennials and Gen Z are asking for it to be different. So I really wanted to thread these variables throughout and let's take a look at what are the values of Gen Z and let's talk about what millennials are asking and how they communicate differently than others before them. And so really it's just the story. And I hope that those, whoever picks it up will read the story and hear their own story threaded throughout the pages. But the biggest message of all is really about we have become so much of a mission-focused culture that we have stopped taking care of people. And that is one of the belief systems that's threaded throughout is everything at some point became the mission. Like when everything becomes the mission, then we start to sacrifice our relationships and our families and our kids. And then we're starting to not do well. The last example I'll give you, Michelle, is there was an article that came out the other day where military leadership at the last minute, just in the last month, as we're recording this, it's November, and in the last month has sent a whole bunch of families, like spontaneously is moving them to Fort Knox to go to recruiting school to handle the recruiting crisis. And some of these families are receiving PCS orders and they have to leave in weeks before Christmas and uproot their entire family. They were not expecting it, but they're being forced into recruiting roles to solve the recruiting crisis. And of course, for the sake of the mission, we are going to move. And I'm not saying that we need to storm the castle and like rebel, but I am saying, is everything really the mission, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what does it mean to take care of people again? Even if we have to ask people as leaders to do hard things, how do we message that differently? How do we lead differently? How do we ask if we have to? And anybody listening right now, at some point you will be in a leadership role. And how do we take care of the people that we are leading? And if we have to ask them to do something hard, like moving your family spontaneously before Christmas, how do we lead in such a way that we don't lose their loyalty, lose their relationships, and that they lose morale simply because we had to ask them to do a hard thing? And that's what I feel like is really important for us to start having a conversation about. If we don't start rebuilding the morale of the force, and if we don't start taking care of people, we will lose this amazing community and this amazing tribe, and it will continue to shift in a direction that will disintegrate. And that's what I think I don't want to see. I don't want to, it does need to evolve and change, and that's okay. But there are some things that are lovely and wonderful and game-changing about this community that I think is valuable and worthy of protection.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm so excited to read it. I will put the links. I know you can get it on Amazon or militarybooks.com. We'll put those links in the caption, so it's just real easy for you guys to get it. I think it's worth a read because it's something we talk about all the time, right? Like you said, like it's all these little things, and it's really easy to point the finger in different places.
Yeah.
But I think at least what I'm excited about is like, okay, how can I impact the situation? And how can I understand the whole picture better?
Yeah.
So then my advocacy, my leadership, any of that can actually positively impact instead of just like attempting to fix one little thing.
Yes, like, that is the goal.
I love that. You got to see the whole picture.
The whole picture. And the last thing I'll say is there are chapters in there that seem like chapters you won't want to read. Like, why would I want to read about congressional funding? Well, guess what? Congressional funding pays for your groceries and it pays for your housing and it keeps mold from growing in your housing. And so understanding when everybody talks about the NDAA, like just having a basic understanding of that informs so much more so that you can. I want everybody, whether you're a spouse or a policymaker or whether you're a civilian, to be able to, if you find yourself at the seat of the table, having a seat at the table, to be able to talk eloquently and know how to contribute to the conversation. And so just as much as there are like chapters that will help you understand that, don't skip those chapters. There's also two whole chapters on the spouse culture. And the book is worth it for just those two chapters because I talk about things in the spouse culture that most of us are not supposed to talk about. Like they are the taboo, subconscious beliefs that are in the spouse culture. Even I talk about the complex relationship that we have with the DOD. When I say that I was angry at the military, I talk about this odd relationship that we have with the military and why you feel what you feel. And I try to give you the words so that you can talk to your spouse or you can talk to someone else in an educated way. So I hope that people will pick it up. I hope you see your own story threaded throughout. It's a little bit of a Greek tragedy, so I try to throw in some positive examples of leadership throughout. So stick with it. And Michelle, thank you so much for not only reading it, but sharing about it. And thank you for your friendship too. And I know that you and I have a common purpose and a common passion to see people do well. And I think that's the goal. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for this interview. This has been amazing. I know I always just feel selfish because really, if nobody else listens, I feel fed, I feel seen, but then just reminded of all the good things. And I know some people, it's not a reminder. It's the first time they're hearing it. And I love that you blessed us and helped us kind of just spread the goodness, just spread the light and spread the goodness.
You're so sweet. Thank you for your time. And thank you for the encouragement. I think all of us need to hear words like Michelle just said. Maybe go out there and say it to someone else today, because you never know if they haven't heard it for a while. And so it just feeds the soul. Yeah. So thank you for doing that for me too today, Michelle. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Well, waiting worries out there, remember, just because it's hard doesn't mean it has to be miserable. We learn lots of different things that we can do. Reintegration is hard. It's different. We don't want it to be, but that's how it is. It doesn't have to be miserable. So go out there. Have a good day, guys. Thanks, Corey, again. Bye.
All of you waiting warriors know that life as a military spouse can be unpredictable. So it's easy to think that when it comes to our aspirations and dreams, you have to wait. But it doesn't have to be like that. National University is a veteran-founded nonprofit university that is firmly committed to helping military dependents. Not only are their programs flexible so you can time your assignments around things like deployments, PCSs, all the other crazy things, they have a scholarship just for military spouses. Use the link in the podcast summary or over on my Instagram bio to learn more about the Whisper Military Spouse Scholarship and the other options they have for tuition reduction for military spouses that could result in zero out-of-pocket educational costs at National University.